Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, it takes willpower to diet, to eat sensibly and exercise regularly over the long haul. So it's no surprise that failure is commonplace. But what if you turn weight loss into a game, bet money, and competed against others? Would that motivate you to keep it up? We'll talk to a Brown University researcher about a new idea that combines social media and financial incentives to drop the pounds.
But first, you're scheduled for blood work and can't eat after midnight. For many of us on the receiving end of the needle prick, the focus is on the blood draw itself. Why do I have to fast? Will they find a good vein on the first try? How many vials will they need? Once the needle's withdrawn and the gauze applied, you may breathe a sigh of relief. But that's when the real work behind blood work begins.
Joining us to describe what happens to your blood when it goes to the lab is Anne-Marie Mullen, Senior Vice President of Laboratory Alliance, a state-licensed lab that provides testing to a 16-county region in central New York. She's board-certified in transfusion medicine, trained at the National Institutes of Health, and is a member of the American College of Healthcare Executives. Welcome to Take Care, Anne-Marie. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Glad to be present.
Blood certainly is invaluable in helping diagnose illness and disease. Let's start with the basic of basics. What is it in blood? What are you looking for? What allows it to be tested and provide all of this valuable information?
Certain tests require certain components of one's blood. There's whole blood, so some tests are performed on the entire blood specimen itself. Many of the tests that are done, say, in the chemistry department are done on what's known as serum, which is the liquid portion of the blood. If you let a tube of blood settle, you would have the serum rise to the top and all of the red blood cells, that which makes the blood red in color, settle to the bottom. So in chemistry, we perform a lot of tests on the serum. Some tests in, say, the hematology department are performed on the red blood cells are on a whole blood specimen. Some tests are performed on urine. Other tests are performed on body fluids or a piece of tissue.
So you're having your blood drawn, and you notice a few things. And we'll talk about the actual process of having the blood drawn a little bit later on. But they're taking blood, sometimes more than one or two vials. Each vial has a different color-coded top. Where does that blood go? And what are they actually taking notes on? What's going on? Why are things being separated right then and there as the blood comes out of your vein?
Oftentimes, tests are performed on tubes of blood with caps of different colors. And those caps on the tubes indicate what is or is not in that tube itself. Some tests, as I mentioned before, are performed on whole blood. So the specimen will be drawn into a tube that keeps that blood from clotting, and it keeps it in a liquid state because we need to make sure that the whole tube is homogeneous. Other tests are performed on the serum. So those cap colors indicate whether there is something that's going to allow that specimen to clot or not to clot. And there's different chemicals in there in those tubes that allow certain tests to be performed and other tests not to be performed.
Once that blood is drawn, how long before it really needs to get to the lab? Is there a window of so many hours or so many days that the blood can be tested and after that it's not really useful anymore?
There are a number of tests that are done in any given laboratory. For example, we perform, well over 1,500 tests that are on our test menu. And depending on the test itself, determines how quickly that specimen has to get to the laboratory. A test, say, for example, if a doctor is looking to perform an ammonia level, that test has to get to the laboratory expeditiously within a very short period of time. Some tests can only be performed on a specimen that's kept protected from light because light might degrade the substance that we're looking to measure. So we've got to immediately cover that tube and expeditiously transport it to the laboratory. Some tests can only be performed at ambient or room temperature. Others have to be kept refrigerated. And some other tests that we refer to have what is known as critical processing. And perhaps we need to quickly process that tube and freeze it to to make sure that the substance that we're measuring stays in that tube and doesn't degrade at either room temperature or at a refrigerated temperature. So it varies depending upon the test name, how we have to handle that specimen.
Well, you mentioned that there are so many tests that your lab and other labs can provide. So for the layperson, we're wondering what you had just mentioned, so many facts there about how different things require different tests and conditions. But let's just take something like vitamin D, which when you're having a blood work done now more than ever, they're testing for vitamin D. So we just thought of that one. But what is the science behind locating vitamin D in that blood? Are you looking under a microscope? Is it done by a machine? Is it done by a computer? How do you isolate something like vitamin D and get an actual reading and level in one's blood?
Well, vitamin D itself, you would think that it's a vitamin, and it is, but it's also a hormone. So there's been studies done over the years, and scientists and chemists have been able to determine how we can take a specimen and take the serum portion of one's blood and analyze that serum for that hormone known as vitamin D. The test itself in our laboratory is done on a piece of chemistry equipment. It's an automated piece of equipment that does complex chemical analyses and can isolate and quantitate the amount of vitamin D that's in that specimen at that given day, at that given time. You know, there's some substances in the blood that remain pretty steady over time. There's other substances in blood that at that moment that specimen is drawn, it's only reflective of, say, that person's glucose at that particular hour or that particular moment of the day that the specimen was drawn, because glucose constantly fluctuates in one's blood over time as you eat or as you're not eating. So some substances, say like vitamin D, are more stable in the blood, and they are dependent upon whether you're taking vitamin D supplements. So again, substances vary in terms of their stability, and so some quickly degrade over time, and others remain pretty steady state.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today is Anne-Marie Mullen, Senior Vice President of Laboratory Alliance, based in Central New York. You mentioned blood stability and the different conditions that are required to test for different things, and we know that sometimes we're asked to fast. I mentioned vitamin D as an example, but let me switch over to having your cholesterol checked, which also is part of, let's say, an annual exam and blood draw. And here's a question for you, and I think this might help a lot of people. When you're having your blood drawn for cholesterol, the question is this. Let's say you're at an event, a wedding, a Super Bowl party, or it's a holiday on the weekend, and you're eating so much fattening, fun food that ordinarily you eat more in moderation. Well, you're due to get your blood drawn that week. Well, I would think it might be a mistake to go that very next day, because I don't know if that cholesterol level that you'll get is actually representative of your regular diet. So the question is, how long does that stuff hang around in your blood? If you did eat a very high-fat diet on a Sunday, what day of the week can you expect that your blood will just settle back down to what it normally is rather than getting a false high reading that next day?
For cholesterol, or for what is the doctor typically orders in that case when they're looking for cholesterol, is something called a lipid profile, which contains a cholesterol test. Typically for a cholesterol or a lipid profile, the doctor is going to ask for a 12-hour fast. So you're going to fast 12 hours before you plan on going to either your doctor's office or to a patient service center to have your blood collected. If you've eaten a meal like you just described that's out of the ordinary, you might not want to go the next day, but the thing in the lipid profile that is most sensitive to a recent fatty meal is the triglyceride. It's not so much the cholesterol measurement, it's the triglyceride that's very much affected by a recent meal that's contained fat in it. And that's the reason why we ask a patient to fast at least 12 hours before they have a lipid profile performed, because people eat foods in different quantities and different amounts, and we don't know what all of the measurements of triglyceride could be based on one's diet, one's intake. But we do know what an average person's fasting triglycerides should be. So that's the reason why if somebody ate in the morning and then went off to the doctor's office or to a patient service center and they had a lipid profile, they should really let them know, because the results that we're going to get are going to be affected by that recent intake of a meal containing some quantity of fat.
All right, let's go back to the very beginning of the blood draw, which is the actual blood draw itself. Some of us have wonderful veins that are productive and will easily release what, you know, the phlebotomist or nurse needs. And some of us, like me, have rolling veins, small veins, and it is very difficult to get a good blood draw. What is it that we, as patients, can do beforehand, maybe to make our veins easier to access? I've heard a lot about drinking water. And what do you do on your end to make a blood draw easier for the person with difficult veins?
Sure. Well, there's not a whole lot you can do to change the way your veins are when you go in to present yourself for a blood draw. But yes, you're correct. Keeping yourself properly hydrated will allow the tissue and the area around the veins to be in a better state, so that you can ascertain that vein and quickly go in and draw that patient's specimen. Warming an arm sometimes will help to be able to get to that person's vein a little bit easier. Sometimes the phlebotomist, that's the person that draws the blood, will sometimes ask somebody to make a fist and pump their arm. That just moves the muscle and the tissue around where the veins are so that the vein is a little bit more visible. They also put a tourniquet on the arm, and the tourniquet is put on to help raise that vein up a little bit. And some people have veins that are very visible on the skin surface. Others have the vein that's more deep into the skin. But a trained phlebotomist can usually, with a gloved finger, can feel around and feel where that vein is. And they know where in the center of the arm the veins are typically located. People that have veins that roll or that are very tiny, sometimes we will use what is known as a butterfly, as a type of needle that's a little bit thinner. It's a little bit easier. It's also a little bit trickier for the phlebotomist to collect the blood specimen, because it's coming out of a very narrow piece of tubing into the tube. But a trained, well-trained phlebotomist can easily use a butterfly needle on somebody that has veins that are prone to roll or that are not as easy to see or to feel.
Anne Marie Mullen, Senior Vice President of Laboratory Alliance, based in Central New York, board certified in transfusion medicine, trained at the National Institutes of Health, and is a member of the American College of Healthcare Executives. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
For more information on the basics of blood work, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available at our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, why putting your money where your mouth is, betting that you'll eat less, exercise more, and lose weight may help you diet better. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.